This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Each Friday afternoon at this time, we review the week in state politics. Here for our conversation is Rob Schofield of the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation. Hello.
Hello. Jeff.
Hurricane Irma, the strongest hurricane ever recorded in the Atlantic Ocean, ripped through the Caribbean this week and is now heading toward Florida. North Carolina is in its path, but we wait to find out which parts of the state will receive the most severe effects of this Category 5 storm. Ahead of Irma, Governor Roy Cooper has declared a state of emergency. Now, this is a natural disaster, and politics is a small part of the story. How's Cooper handling this?
I think he's doing fine. I mean, I think at this point, he's monitoring the situation. I am assuming from his reports and comments that he is in touch with the National Weather Service and other states and the federal government. I think this is what we expect governors to do. This is what they do. Roy Cooper's doing exactly what he is supposed to do as the governor.
This is what governors like to do. It puts them in a very comfortable situation where they're wearing, informal clothes, and they get to go on TV and on the radio and talk in calming terms to the public and look gubernatorial. Pat McCrory was at his best when he was doing this. Roy Cooper seems to be a natural for it. He's an experienced elected official, so I'm sure he'll do just fine as well, and has so far as anybody can tell.
First Harvey, now Irma. Jose is next. North Carolina has more than 3,300 miles of coastline. That's counting sounds. What more, Rob, do state and local agencies need to be doing in this moment or in the future in the face of climate change?
I think we really need to treat this as the existential threat that it is. We're looking at the fact that of having fundamental change in our sea level rise and in the look of our coastline and ever more intense storms are a symptom of the climate change and sea level rise that are going to afflict our state going forward. It calls for an all-hands-on-deck response, not just a meeting out a few bucks here and there at the local level. It's an all-hands-on-deck state and national response to what is really almost an existential crisis.
Well, Jeff, during this current hurricane season that we've had, meteorologists have said climate change really is not a factor in this. There are other meteorological things that I'm not a meteorologist. I can't even say it.
Meteorologist.
Yes. But there are other factors that are really playing into this. This is not, we can't say we're having these storms because of climate change. There's a lot of factors in there. I think also to say that Houston was hit like it was and had these terrible floods that they're still, it's going to be months before they really dig out of a lot of this, is purely because of zoning. I mean, when you have that kind of rainfall, I don't know what could have prevented it.
You said zoning? You were moving quickly. Is that what you just said?
Right.
Okay. Sorry. Please continue. I just want to make sure I heard you correctly.
And Rob had mentioned that, and some people have said that they believe that part of the damage in Houston was a result of them not having strict zoning regulations. I'm not sure that's really accurate. I would argue that one of the reasons why these storms have created and caused more damage, more expensive damage, much more recovery, is because of the building that has occurred, whether that's due to zoning, or I would argue that's really due to insurance and flooding and flood insurance and all being heavily subsidized, that people who are building in those flood prone areas are not assuming the risk that is associated with that. And if they did, then perhaps there would not be as much building and all. You look at you mentioned the North Carolina coast. I mean, there are many, many miles of beautiful second homes built right on the ocean. If those people had to assume the risk that really is posed by the storms, if they had to pay that themselves, I think we would have less construction, less building along the coastline with that.
That might be true with respect to beach houses, but in general, the problem is not an economics issue, it's a physics issue. There are more of us. There are millions and millions of us. North Carolina is an exploding state with 10 million people. The policies that we, by and large, follow in this area were for a state of half that size. And add to that the fact that we've eviscerated our environmental protection rules. We're doing away with buffers that protect streams and control flooding. Flood control is actually something that legislature has been ratcheting back on. The federal EPA is at a 30-year low in terms of how many staff it's got. we've just got to get serious and own up to the fact that actually our freedom is in jeopardy if we don't invest in these structures and resources that will allow us to survive this increasingly volatile environment in which we live. We know the seas are warming. We know that that contributes to intensification of storms. It's, again, it's putting our heads in the sand to pretend that that's not the case.
You asked what communities, what local governments, what else could be done, either short-term or long-term. And I would suggest certainly long-term that our communities, particularly in the eastern part of the state that are so subject to flooding, with water and sewer systems, and investing in shoring those up. Many of the water and sewer systems across North Carolina have been in place for 50 years. They're starting to deteriorate. They're very fragile. When you have this flooding, when you have these kind of storms, part of the devastation to communities is the impact that it has on water and sewer. And then, you know, just imagine, if you would, that's difficult for people to get back into their homes, difficult for businesses to build back up, and then also, I mean, nearly impossible to attract investments and businesses into those communities. So I would say, if I were making a long-term plan of what North Carolina should do, it would be to really take a good hard look at infrastructure, investing in that, using tax revenue for those sort of core functions, rather than some of the foolishness we see with these ballparks and convention centers and, you know, other things like that, that I think would be a hard argument to say that that is a core function of government. Providing water and sewer, a strong water and sewer structure and system is clearly something that needs to be done.
Meanwhile, the saga over pollution in the Cape Fear River and tainted Wilmington drinking water continued this week. State environmental officials ordered Chemours to stop discharging all fluorinated compounds into the river basin. The state also filed a lawsuit against the company. Contamination dating back decades was discovered back in June. Did the administration take action quickly enough, or did they wait too long on this?
It's my understanding, I mean, they took action as soon as it became aware that it was a problem and have followed up with that and ordered additional tests and are looking upstream, downstream, requiring records from the company of what they've put in there, when, and those kind of things. I mean, from what the newspaper reports that I've read, I mean, I think that the investigation and the procedure is exactly appropriate, what we expect, and I hope that they will continue to do this to ensure that that water supply is safe and to give people that live in that part of the state the confidence that it is.
Yeah, I don't think that the problem with what's going on in the Cape Fear, which has essentially become a giant sewer, is our immediate response. It is a long-term problem that was years and decades in the making, and it has to do, again, with our sustained disinvestment in environmental protection, our refusal to invest in the kind of things that would protect our rivers and streams and actually impose regulations on industry that they may not want to have to abide by. But that's what happens when you have a vastly, you know, a vast and growing state with a growing population, lots more people putting lots more effluent out. You've got to have regulations, or, you know, there's just no way to control it. And I fear that that's what's going on in Cape Fear, and it's not going to be solved. Even if we do address the Gen X or Chemours issues, there's a lot more to do, and it's going to take years and years to clean it up.
Okay. President Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced this week that the federal Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, program will end in March of 2018. North Carolina has the seventh highest number of young undocumented immigrants, the so-called Dreamers. Pressure to do something is now squarely on Congress. U.S. Senator Tom Tillis said he will soon introduce legislation. A bill appears as though it could pass the Senate, but a path in the U.S. House seems murkier. Wondering from each of you, what kind of immigration reform is realistic from Congress in the next 6 months?
Boy, I mean, that's the $64 million question. I hope, since, you know, in the bottom of my heart, that we can get some real reform along the lines of what they're discussing. The fact that we, you know, it's not just the 800,000 Dreamers who are already have their DACA status. There's hundreds of thousands of more kids who are going to be turning, you know, the appropriate age in the months to come. There are people who have to do their, you know, they have to certify their renewals by October 5th coming up, or they're going to lose and face deportation. So, I mean, this is a huge problem. I think there's bipartisan agreement, except for the extreme parts of the right on the Republican Party, that we've got to do something. But you're right, it's going to be very difficult to get that through without the agreement of some significant chunk of the Republican Party in Congress.
Jeff, you mentioned there's tremendous pressure on Congress, as well there should be. I don't know what they're going to do, but I think that that pressure needs to continue. I think that it needs to come from the administration. You know, the role of immigration policy and immigration law falls to Congress. And I really commend the president for saying, this is your job, do it, and you've got 6 months to do it. But getting out of Washington, or I think that it is, I think it's a bad idea to just use the excuse, Washington is in gridlock, Congress can't get anything done. You know, we elect these people. We have elections every 2 years for congressmen. We need to put, there's a lot of pressure on Congress to do something, and you know what? We need to put a lot of pressure on Congress to get it done.
But it's massive Republican majorities in both houses, a Republican president. If they can't get this done, then it obviously reflects on the Republican
Party.
But
these ideas in immigration reform, I mean, the reason why President Obama issued this executive order is because he couldn't get anything done with the Democrat Congress. We just need to,
he issued
so
it in 2012.
This excuse right. of, well, there's party disagreement on this or Republicans. You know, I think people are sick of it. Fix it. It's Congress's job to fix it. Fix it.
Well, the problem is that there are going to be a lot of people hurt in the meantime. I hope very much that it happens quickly. But the way that President Trump and Attorney General Sessions have gone about it is they have already initiated a process that's going to harm hundreds of thousands of people in the months, even over the next 6 months. There's lots of people who are going to lose their status or who are not going to gain status and will face deportation because of the way they've decided to go about it.
In terms of doing anything, this is one of the biggest failures of Congress, both Republican and Democratic
Absolutely.
Congress
for
over
decades.
The last 20 years.
Yes,
and probably beyond that. But again, my question, to reiterate it, is the U.S. House is so diverse and there are so many little there are fractures and there are different philosophies within the Republican caucus. Are they going to be able to get anything done?
They have to. Well, I guess they don't have to. I mean, where is the leadership? And what they need to do is they need to put a straight-up bill to deal with this. These children who have come here, whose parents have brought them here as children to the United States, don't lard it up, don't load it up. Just deal with this. Don't put it in a budget bill. Don't put any strings attached to it. Just do this and let Congress make a decision. And I'm telling you, the leaders that put that forward and the congressmen that vote for it can have something to come back to the voters and say, we can get something done.
If they're Republicans, they're quite likely get primaried by conservatives. Like Greg Brannon and the other extreme right.
Let's look to leadership.
All right. But it's not Patrick McHenry. I'll use that as one example, and then we'll move on. Patrick McHenry, conservative Republican congressman from North Carolina. He's the whip in the House. He's the number four ranking member of the U.S. House from North Carolina. If he votes for this, if they move immigration reform through, if it's a bipartisan effort, he'll get primaried. Won't he? And isn't that the concern? Isn't that how
elections are supposed to work? You go, you make decisions, you have a record, you stand by it or you don't. And you stand for election in 2 years.
And maybe I'm not articulating it well. I think that fear of being primaried is such a fear for so many members. I wonder if there are going to be enough votes to push immigration reform through. That's my wonder.
Is inaction better than that?
I wouldn't be at all surprised that in 6 months from now that President Trump issues some sort of order saying, let's extend this for a few more months. Nobody wants to see these – well, only a very small minority want to see these young people actually deported. But
I agree.
I don't know. I think you're right, Jeff. I think it's going to be very difficult to get something passed.
Sorry to carry on that. But it's interesting in the policy and the politics of it, so on and so forth. Yeah. Finally, with a partisan gerrymandering case going to the U.S. Supreme Court next month, a bipartisan group from Congress filed a brief this week asking justices to end the centuries-old practice. 18 Democrats signed this amicus brief, as well as 17 Republicans. How significant is this?
I think this is one of the last great hopes for our republic. I really think this is an incredibly important case. I think that people of both parties of goodwill recognize that the explosion in extreme gerrymandering and dark money is a threat to our democracy. And I'm very hopeful. I think it's very significant when you got John McCain signing on to a brief with Sheldon Whitehouse and attacking dark money and special interest and gerrymandering. I think it sends a strong message to the Supreme Court, and I hope they're listening.
I think it's a great sign. I mean, you know, let's do this on immigration reform. Let's do this on tax reform. Let's do this on health care reform. And this is how you get things done. I think what these people are saying is we want fair, competitive elections. I think that's what the American people want. And I commend them. I'm glad they're listening. And, you know, let's do more of it.
And be clear, what would happen is if the Supreme Court upholds this Wisconsin ruling, it establishes a procedure for doing away with partisan gerrymandering, which is, of course, at the root of the maps that we're now contesting in North Carolina. And so it would mean we would have a greater, much greater shot at fairer maps, fairer elections, a chance for voters to choose their politicians instead of the other way around.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President with the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield, writes for NC Policy Watch. Hear more of our conversation at WUNC.org. Hope you both enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks, Jeff.